Breaking the Panel is made possible by you and other listeners just as awesome as you are. If you want to support the show and get a little something in return, just go to patreon.com/breakingthepanel, because we do appreciate the help.
You know who the experts on diversity are? Three white guys. That's who the experts on diversity
are.
Two and a half white guys.
Hey, you know, does it count that I grew up in the hood?
These days, the comic book owns pop culture. You'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comic's life. We're Breaking the Panel.
And welcome to Breaking the Panel, your weekly source for all things that are comic book based. You know, we got some good stuff on the table. Let's just get right to it. I've been rocking on a podcast in Charles McFall. Over there is Soapbox Klotz.
Heyo.
That just felt appropriate, bringing back the old title there, man.
Spoiler alert.
And off to the right over here is Fanboy Chris. We're bringing back old titles if we are.
Oh, I like it.
I think Chaz is trying to say you're a joker.
King of the trolls, maybe.
King of something, I guess.
You know what? I know it's a little out of order. First off, we want to hear from you. We want to hear your email. We want to get your emails. We want to do all that. So hit us up, btp@giantsizeteamup.com. BreakingThePanel.com's got a speak pipe. You can leave your voicemail, that kind of thing. But I've been going through the Iron Fist, right? Or the Iron Fist. I've been going through him.
Good thing he's not going through you.
I know you both are finished. I've got one episode left, and I'm hoping that it'll do well. But I got to tell you, episode 10, 11, 12, maybe even 9, 10, 11, 12. 12 was okay. It just 9, 10, 11, I thought were fluffy and filler. And honestly, if you could smash all three of those together, to me, you still wouldn't even have a whole episode of good stuff. You know, and
just without too much spoilers, what was generally happening in those couple episodes?
A lot of talking. I think we talked a little bit last week about one of them was episodes with the brother and sister. I called it the CW episode, where it was all the relationships were happening, right? The brother and sister were bonding. Iron Fist and Colleen were bonding in a different way. You know, different little things where they had great moments. Way. But it was a lot of dialogue. And then one of those episodes is where that the campus, I'll just leave it at that. They're on that campus. And you needed little things. The little things that were great were the things we needed, but it was surrounded by an hour of nothingness almost.
Yeah.
And it made me not care. And then you know, not to make it Iron Fist. I know we've talked about Iron Fist a lot lately. But for me, maybe I'm just getting burned out because I tried to catch up on all my CW shows today. And I'm watching all the way through the end. I watched the last two or three episodes of Legends of Tomorrow, which is one of my favorite of the shows. It's not great. It's cheesy, but it's one of my most enjoyable of the CW shows, I guess you'd say, personally. And even then, on the finale, I was like, and I won't give it away, but everything, it's like old, easy comic book tropes is what it went down to. It's like, I put in the thing, our superhero TV shows gimping out? Because they're just like, whatever. Everybody just likes our Flash. It's like, no, I do like the graphics. I do like the superhero moments, but I want more. And I'm watching The Flash. Speaking of Flash, I'm watching The Flash. Same thing. It's predictable. I can tell you what's going to happen. Oh, this person is going to do this. This we're going to do that. Is it me or are superheroes just kind of grinding it out, calling it in, not putting in the effort to make their shows great?
I don't know about that, but I mean, and like we've discussed previous, I'm not a big fan of the word trope because everything under the sun has already been done. So everything at this point is a trope. And it's, I think that this season, Flash, this last part of the season for me has been probably the weakest that I've seen come out of the Flash. And I'm really surprised at the Legends of Tomorrow. I was feeling that way about most of the season, and for me the last two episodes fixed it. Like I was happy. Like there were real stakes in the last episode, and I understand what you're saying. I understand your point of view where you're saying that
that what was happening in the show,
they didn't answer it in the classic way. It was still done in the classic way, but they came at it from a different direction, and that's what I appreciated, because it gave you that old comic book answer, but gave it to you in a different way. So I really like, for me, those last two episodes really saved the season for me.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, you know, I guess it was a little bit, I don't know, a little bit different for me there. But yeah, what you're saying is.
But in my defense, I haven't listened to what Jason and David said about it, so I don't know. I don't know where you're coming from. I don't know where you're coming from.
I haven't either. Damn it! I have not listened to what Jason and David.
You don't have to listen to the show anymore. They just send you your memo.
Here are your speaking points.
In your email box every Monday, dear Charles, this is what you think about all DC properties and a couple Marvel properties as well. And don't forget, send the check. Ding, ding, ding. Thank you.
And actually, I had a DC quote I wanted to say today, but I can't remember what it is right now. So I
might well, get to speaking it. Of DC on screen, they have a Q&A episode forthcoming. And so they reached out to some of their fans, and they said, hey, we're going to do a Q&A episode, and we want some questions and stuff. So I decided to ask them, how exhausting is it to provide Charles McFall with literally all of his thoughts? And how much does he pay you for that? And so I'm really looking forward to that episode to find out just how tired they are of propping you up, and also how much it costs you.
Chris, but to the point, I honestly, Rory's dialogue in the whole last episode, his character in the whole last episode of Legends of Tomorrow, that was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. To me, that was great. The last couple episodes, actually.
Rory on this show.
Mr. Rory. No. Captain Hunter. Actually, that's where it gets confusing. Mr. Rory. Sorry. Mr. Rory. Yeah.
I apologize.
Heatwave. And see, I have a problem remembering, as much as I give out nicknames, I have a problem remembering them. So, you know, I can remember Rory for whatever reason. I don't know. I wouldn't say there were tropes. I would just say, it's not going to matter. It's not going to matter. But the very, very, the zinger at the end makes me excited for next season if they get a next season. I don't know if it's been announced they get a next season or not. Flash is being a little predictable, but it's, you're right. I mean, it's the weakest of all that they've done in the season. But again, going even back to Iron Fist, here's what I'm running to wrap up. I haven't seen the finale yet. I want to see the finale, and I probably won't talk about it in the air anymore. But I will see the finale tonight or tomorrow of Iron Fist. But my ultimate still review is, while it might be the weakest of the Marvel properties on Netflix, it's still a Marvel property on Netflix. It still got me excited. The first couple episodes, I you know, when people said the first four were a slow burn, I actually liked those the best, those first four episodes. The middle episode, up until about episode 9 or 10, I was really into the show. It just got weak for me. It got fluffy. But I'm really excited to see what they do with his character when he's surrounded by Luke Cage and Jessica Jones and Daredevil, and we see that happen.
We just did, and apparently all he does is slouch at the back of an elevator.
That being, of course, something you can see on Facebook itself. I know Klotz, see, you know, I think I might be falling into Klotz's territory of burnout of I can only keep up with so many shows. And actually, as much teasing as I get, and as much as I actually do agree with DC on screen and a lot of their opinions and reviews, they did a review on the Justice League trailer. I hated it. I hated every second of what they said. I was like, no, he does not sound like a redneck. Damn it. No. Did you not see how bad? Maybe we got a different version of the trailer, but Klotz, I was with you on Cyborg doesn't look good at all. Cyborg looks half finished.
Well, and that's what I told my wife when I got home after I got done listening to it. I was like, I think they got a different trailer than I did because I don't think I've ever been as masochistic in my life as to have to watch that thing for multiple hours. And that's what they claim they had done, is watched it multiple times.
Well, I think that was tongue-in-cheek, personally, but yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Maybe the studio sent them something better.
I'm behind on Arrow. I don't know how many episodes.
Quick aside here. Chris, does your wife watch these movies with you and such?
No, she watched Logan with me.
So basically, you harass her by talking about comic book properties.
Oh, yeah.
Because I just imagined, like, you coming home from work and she's standing in the kitchen making dinner or something. Because I assume you guys are, like, major nuclear family like that. And that you're just like, man, those chuckleheads over on DC on screen just do not get this Justice League trailer. And her being like, honey. Why don't you go downstairs and talk to your comic friends and Dinner will be ready in a half hour.
It's kind of like that sometimes. Yeah.
Please don't talk to me. Please.
It was actually very much like that for me the other day when I was talking about I'm doing research on possibly upgrading my phone this year to get more memory. I like my phone. I just need more memory in it. And I was telling my wife, like, oh, this, and she just looked at me and said, I do not care. And I'm like, but it'll affect your phone. I don't care. Like, fine. Let me go find somebody.
Charles, you know increasing your phone's memory doesn't improve yours, right?
Shut up.
I do sometimes I bring her in on stuff when I just want like a fresh perspective on something. Like I at some point tonight I'm bringing her down and sitting her down in front of the Spider-Man Homecoming trailer and the Justice League trailer, and I'm gonna walk out of the room and I'm gonna tell her, you tell me which one you like, which movie you would be more likely to see.
Uh-huh.
So, and hopefully I don't have to divorce her.
I definitely like using my wife as a gauge for the everyman audience, right? The people who aren't comic geeks. And, you know, if she likes the movie, it helps give a different perspective on it. If she hates the movie, blah, blah. And Iron Fist, I've hated watching it with her because she's not into the Netflix series. She watched Jessica Jones, and I thought she watched all of it because she liked it. No, she watched it because David Tennant was in it, and she was watching it. And then she said she finished it because she just kept waiting for something to happen. I'm like, something happens every episode.
That is kind of fair, though.
I guess, probably.
I mean, that is probably that's the chief complaint I see about Jessica Jones, like why a lot of people didn't really enjoy it, is that is a very everybody standing around and talking 90% of an episode every episode show. Like, it's rough.
Maybe I'm getting a little burned out on trying to manage too many shows under my belt, trying to keep up with too much, because I didn't feel that way with any of the other properties. I felt like, well, Luke Cage and Jessica Jones, right in the middle, it felt like, okay, about half each episode, and I'd say in the middle, I'd say, you know, 9, 10, 11, somewhere in there. About each half of the episode was a real episode, the other half was filler, but then it picks right back up. He's like, oh my God, the last two or three were amazing. I'm not feeling that here.
Personally, I'm finding myself preferring to binge something rather than watch week to week. You know what I mean? I'm starting to feel like the pressure of trying to follow anything week to week just gets to be too much, especially when you deal with stuff like, you know, whatever network it happens to air on, assuming it's not like straight to streaming or whatever, whatever network it happens to air on, if there's an event like a sports event or, you know, a news event or any kind of, you know, especially last year with the election cycle and everything, I just felt like shows were getting bumped left and right. And it's like, man, it's really exhausting to try to stay on top of a show week to week, you know, and try to stay like invested, where I'm like, I find it much easier to consume something all at once. But there's a lot to consume. I mean, we really are living in a tremendous golden age of television. The stuff that we complain about for like some of these comic properties and stuff is like, if this happened 10 years ago, we would have been salivating at the mouth for like, oh, did you see this week's Flash? It's so good to finally see comics. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I remember back to like Heroes when we were like, oh, this is great. And well,
to be fair, that first season was,
it was great. Fantastic.
It was effing great. And it's still, that holds up.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, that's fair. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, that's the thing, is it's like, but back then, like, Heroes was like lightning in a bottle. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
stuff like that. Things that were like hugely like popular and basically cultural icons that kind of came out of nowhere. But now we've got I would say any one of the comic properties that's on TV right now could have been that 10, 15 years ago. You know, it could have been 15 years ago. It could have been like rivaling Buffy for, you know, nerd eyes. You know what I mean? Like, it, any one of them, and it would have been right on par with it. You know what I mean? Because it's no better or worse per se than a lot of the campier stuff from the late 90s, early 2000s. So, yeah, I mean, it's just kind of, it's crazy. There's a lot of content out there. It's tough to stay on top of all of it. I mean, we're so hypercritical of it now too. There's plus and minuses to that. You know what I mean?
Maybe that is a problem these publishing houses are having, is that how do you, there's a famous quote by Steve Jobs that he's basically said, my job is not to give the people what they want, is to give the people what they need before they need it. And that's the problem, is Netflix, when Daredevil hit, oh my God, we didn't know we needed this, but we need this. Now we're at 1, 2, 3. This is the fifth series. You know, if you count Daredevil season two, two. So this is the fifth season, whatever you want to call it. It's the fifth of watching. And now we're like, okay, we need something more. We need something better. And that's difficult.
Yeah, well, and it is. And it is a double-edged sword. But the definite good outcome is gone are the days that we have to worry about somebody coming to TV with a Hulk Daredevil TV movie from back in the 80s. I mean, we will never, ever have to witness that horrible again, or the Thor one, or any of those, because they have to make money off of it, and nobody's ever going to sit through something, some horrible adaptation like that ever again. Now, there's going to be misfires, but I think the misfires that are happening now are going to be fewer and far between than they have been in the last, say, 20 years. So it is elevating the properties that we are getting. Now, there are times when we as fans need to back up and just appreciate what we have, absolutely. But Hollywood, in general, I think, does that to itself. And like we talked about with Iron Fist, when we found out how quick they went into production and they didn't stop and take a moment, slow down and do it the right way.
Yeah.
Then that's them doing it to themselves. Like, I would easily have waited an extra 6 months for Iron Fist if I would have known that we would have gotten, like, top-notch fight sequences or something.
Yeah, I agreed. And, I mean, every show, God, the longer you go, the more likely it is you're going to run into a screw-up. Mm-hmm. Right? I've been watching Supernatural for 12 or 13 years now, whatever, however many seasons it's in. And even now, every year when they get to the end of the big bad, because sometimes they'll do a big bad for two or three seasons. So whenever they get done with their big bad, I'm like, this has got to be it. There's nowhere else to go. And then they find a new place to go. And at first, sometimes it's a little rocky, but typically with that show, for me, they've hit the same high points that I want to hit that keeps me watching. This season, and I think it's the 12th season that they're in, they're hitting like, all right, you know, I'm kind of not done with this show because I really like the characters, but I'm done with this episode. Let's skip to the next one, you know. And I'm feeling that across the board with Supergirl and with Flash and Arrow. Man, Arrow's like the last on my list to watch of the CW shows. And I don't know why. It's not intentional. It's
funny because it's the groundwork that everything else was built on.
Yeah, and I enjoy it when I watch it.
But it's kind of that adage, you know. You know, sometimes you're the hero, but you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Yeah. Well, and yeah. Jason and I have actually been talking offline a little bit, and we kind of both agreed that Arrow, as far as...
It's called praying. When you reach out to Jason or David, it's praying.
The seasons that we currently find ourselves in across the board, if you compare the current seasons of all the CW shows, this season of Arrow has been the strongest out of all of them. Mm. So take that for what you will when you think about Arrow in generality. But, we feel like Arrow's been the strongest one this season. This Prometheus storyline's been pretty good. I mean, it's kind of fallen into a little bit of similar territory that the Deathstroke stuff is, you know, went into. But there's been enough good stuff, I think.
It actually tricked me a little bit. I had a little bit of a guess of what was going on, and it tricked me sideways a little bit.
What? Charles was wrong.
I'm not at all caught up on the DC stuff this season. Now that they're capping off, I'll probably go grab one or two of them and binge them in the next couple weeks here. But I think, like, one of the issues I've had with Arrow is, like, it was at its best, in my opinion, when Deathstroke was the narrative. You know, when he was the big bad.
I liked it. I liked that season. And really screw tight. You guys. Hold on. Screw you guys. DC on Screen hated that season. They thought that was the worst season. I liked season two with Deathstroke.
See, I find that interesting because I found the stuff with all the stuff that really focused on Ra's and everything was like, it was cool, but it was like, it was getting kind of like stranger than fiction after a while. You know what I mean? Like, it was just getting like really out there. You know what I mean? Like, it really push the boundaries of what we were going to be like down with, you know what I mean? And I think they haven't really entirely recovered from that, but I haven't seen all of this season yet. So, I don't know, man, it's tough. It's, especially with the DC shows, we see them like brush up against really exciting storylines and then sometimes they just move past them.
Yeah.
And that sucks. Cause it's like, oh man, if you had gone down this road, that would have been really cool. You know? It's hard to say. I mean, it's tough to run these shows too. I mean, you know, especially when you're putting one out every week. I definitely think in the case of Iron Fist that it needed a couple more months of prep. Obviously, they were rushing it out so they could push Defenders out, which I think is unfortunate because it leaves the last leg of Defenders the weakest to stand on. You know what I mean? And we should be getting ready. We should be going out on a high note waiting for Defenders. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. We should be pumped right now. We should be first half of Luke Cage or Daredevil season 2 pumped, and we're not. We're just kind of, everybody's just kind of like, ugh. But I guess maybe if that means that if Defenders is really rock solid, everybody will just enjoy it so much more. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. And here's a question, an honest question for you guys. Do we need to introduce characters before they hit a series? As in, did we really need Iron Fist before Defenders came out? Could we not get Iron Fist new in Defenders?
In the case of Defenders, you do, because it's okay. The team up. You know, miniseries.
Because it's a miniseries, yes. Right. If they would have had a full, if it would have been a full series, I think you could have easily introduced a new character in that, and we would have gotten to know the character through that.
It's kind of the same way how MCU, each character in the MCU for the most part got their own solo film to come in on. You know, even Ant-Man. You know what I mean? Which was a pretty big risk for them. You know what I mean? Because yeah. Ant-Man being an older character, like Ant-Man's huge with like our producer Mike Woodard's age group, you know what I mean? Like the dudes who've been reading comics for decades upon decades. Ant-Man was a much bigger part of the universe 40 years ago, 30 years ago, you know what I mean? So it was a bit of a risk for them, but they cast the right people and they dunked that film, you know what I mean? Like they slam dunked it hard. And then we get Civil War, you know, and we get the big team up movie and everybody's had their chance to have their backstory told. So there's emotional resonance for everybody who's involved in that airport scene. You know what I mean? Every single one of those characters, we feel something for, you know what I mean? None of them are just set pieces, you know, to just be toyed with by the characters we actually care about. Every single one of them has all of their emotional backstory and their motivations, all that stuff. We're with it, you know? And that's something that I think Marvel has done an exceptional job with in, you know, both in MCU proper and also with the Netflix stuff. I mean, I think the big issue was prep time on Iron Fist. They had put a little more time and effort into it. I think they could have tightened it up quite a bit. And I feel bad for Finn Jones in particular because, what we covered last week where he talked about his prep time and everything. I think he's taken the brunt of the backlash. You know what I mean? I think people are kind of coming down on him hard. And I bet he was excited to take this role. And I bet he was passionate about it. Because anybody who takes these Marvel jobs seems to be over the moon about it. You know what I mean? They're like, well, one, obviously it's a big payday. I mean, playing a Marvel character right now is probably one of the biggest buoys to your career that you could ask for, you know? So I think he was excited about it. I think he's passionate about it. And I think it's got to be tough seeing the success of the other three shows and just kind of getting dumped on. You know what I mean?
But here's the plus side is because of that, because of the Marvel, the Netflix, you're playing in that universe, you get that chance to redeem yourself. You're already in the Defenders. And if you do great there and the feedback's positive there, you get another chance. Whereas in most TV, if it was just on NBC and Iron Fist did a season and the numbers just didn't do well, it'd just be gone.
Right now. Yeah.
And I love that about Netflix Marvel partnership is we've got this big universal vision. Whereas I'm not entirely convinced currently that Iron Fist will get a second series, but he's going to be in Defenders and he's hopefully going to be in other stuff going, you know, team up stuff, showing up in other shows, so on and so forth. Whereas in regular network television, that ain't never gonna happen.
Honestly, I think the best play is to find a way to make the buddy cop show.
God, you're right. Yes,
Power Man,
Heroes for Hire. I want to see that.
Heroes for Hire would be fantastic.
You've already got part one and part two. You got Luke Cage and Iron Fist, which was original. You've already got Misty and Colleen Wing, which was the follow up.
Yeah.
Yeah, they took it over.
I mean, you could even combine those.
Yes.
You know, like you could just make it a team show with those four characters central. And the big thing, we kind of talked about this a little bit on the panel for Iron Fist. The big thing I'd like to see a little bit more of is them not just mentioning the characters from the other shows, but actually bringing them in. I mean, they did it with Luke Cage and Jessica Jones, but like, I want to see Iron Fist and Daredevil rock it out once in a while outside of just the Defenders alone. You know what I mean? When that was one of the things that I really loved about season two of Daredevil was Daredevil and Punisher teaming up because they have to. You know what I mean? When I think about Daredevil season two, like, I don't think it gets enough credit sometimes because it was really exceptional. They fit a lot into that season. You know what I mean? I mean, we got we basically got the intro show for the Punisher's character and got all of, you know, the emotional backstory that we needed for him and all the context and everything. And that was great. And it also played into the main story. We got Elektra. Like, it was solid. Like, that was a tight season and a lot happened. And I like it. Yep. Oh, man.
Yeah.
And I don't think any of us really expected to get that much Kingpin. You know, we kind of thought we'd get almost none.
Right. Right. That I loved it. It was, to me, it was a shocking twist because I expected he's out of the picture. You're not going to get much, maybe a cameo. And we got, what, 2 or 3 episodes with him in it, strongly.
And, you know, it was amazing. Ultimately, we find out that he's still, even in prison, he's still pulling puppet strings, you know, and that's a big thing. Because that's what you want your supervillains to do. You know what I mean? Your big Machiavellian villains who are always playing with things in the shadows. You want to know that they've still got their fingers in the game. You know what I mean? That's absolutely a mixed metaphor. That came out really weird.
No, I understand what you're saying. And that's what bothered me about a little bit about Iron Fist, because I know it's a network thing. I know they're building up the Defenders, but when they're getting ready to go to China and they know who they're dealing with, I don't know. Call in your... Well, he's in prison. You can't call in Luke Cage. He's in. They've established he's still in Georgia prison. Okay, fine.
Jessica Jones is in prison, too.
Well, she wasn't at the end of the series, so that's something that's...
Isn't she? Yeah.
No, she's at her desk drinking again, and the friend that she saved is protecting her. He shuts the door.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I was a little confused.
But you don't need to call her. She's not tied. She wouldn't do this. That's fine. But you know who would go to China with you? Who might get you out of legal trouble? Who's dealt with the hand before? Oh, I don't know. Daredevil. Who's like 2 blocks away from you and she knows him. Ring, ring, MF-er, pick up a phone.
Yeah.
And they can't do that because they're getting ready for the Defenders. And that bugged me just a little because she name dropped everybody just about in that one conversation. And yet they're going to go on their own.
How much better would the Drunken Master fight have been if it was Daredevil and Iron Fist?
Right.
And he was just, you know, bobbing and weaving and just, you know what I mean? Like, that could have been insane.
Right.
Or if Daredevil was fighting somebody else in that scene and then had to clean up the Drunken Master for Iron Fist, that would have been funny as well. Because I could see the comedic, you know, like, he just kind of, like, crosses over and just pummels him all of a sudden and... Man, we should definitely write some of this stuff for
Marvel. I like the poetry of Charles pointing out that someone else was name dropping. In such an exasperated tone, in fact.
I'm not exasperated to see name dropped. I'm exasperated she didn't pick up the phone like I would and call my name drop friends in. You know? But that's the other thing. This is the last of Iron Talk, because Iron Fist Talk, so I know we got something else we want to talk about before we hit the break. But I keep watching these fights, and while Klotz, I kind of see what you're saying. I don't feel it. I don't disconnect. He fights. I'm okay with the way Iron Fist fights, but I don't understand why he wins the fight. There's no in the Daredevil fights. Yeah. There's a defining moment. Oh, he's getting the upper hand. All of a sudden, it's like Iron Fist is fighting. He's on his own. He's good. I'm glad he's a little bit better than the other person, but there's no defining moment. It's like, oh, this is why he won. All of a sudden, he just won.
So
what?
Yeah, that's okay. So that's the thing about martial arts, you know, like martial arts fights, especially kung fu fights, there's a couple of different ways of handling them, but generally you want to show in the first couple seconds, you want to establish overall skill level, you know, you want to demonstrate who, you know, who's talented, you know what I mean? So you'll find out if a guy's just a goon real quick, cause he'll just get kicked away or something like that. But like in particular, when it's a showdown with somebody who's also skilled, you usually see a demonstration of their particular techniques. And then oftentimes the hero will get beat down a little bit or whatever, like if they underestimate their opponent or whatever, and then they'll tighten up, you know what I mean? And there's, again, there's different, like you can still definitely have a situation where it's an inferior fighter. Like Iron Fist is not the guy though. You know, so when I think about like how these fight sequences should have gone down, I'm thinking of stuff like, as I brought up on the panel, I'm thinking of like Donnie Yen in Ip Man, you know, where that's three films that are focused on a legendary Wing Chun master. He's a cultural icon, a historical figure, all of that. But the fights show him using Wing Chun, his particular style of Kung Fu. It's a clinic on it. You know what I mean? Like it basically shows everything that the discipline is capable of. And so over the course of the three films, they show him fighting tons of different styles, you know? So he fights other Kung Fu styles. He fights Japanese styles. He fights Western boxing. And you know what I mean? And it's a showcase of how a master of a form can demonstrate that, you know what I mean? That art form in multiple scenarios. And with Iron Fist, he's not specialized per se in just one, you know, school of Kung Fu. He should be proficient in multiple, you know? So we should see him, like, at one point, he assumes, like, a tiger stance, you know what I mean? And it's very obvious. Right. Everybody knows what to look for, yeah. That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So he should have spent the rest of that fight using the full breadth of tiger style to fight that opponent, you know what I mean? That's the other thing, is Iron Fist is the kind of guy who should be picking the style that gives him an advantage against the opponent he's fighting. So when he fights a drunken master, he should have a different style than what he had fighting the two, you know, knife-wielding Russians, or, you know what I mean? Or the weapon master, you know what I mean? The Japanese weapon master. So that's the thing, is there was none of that. It was like he would do some pseudo mystical, you know, mystical hand gestures and stuff, and then he would just do bad basic choreography, and it's like, that's not showcasing Kung Fu. Kung Fu should be at the heart of this. I mean, it'd be like remaking a Karate Kid movie and not showcasing karate. You
right,
know what I mean?
Yeah.
It'd be like, that's what it felt like to me, is it was like just having generic like action movie punching and kicking kind of stuff, you know, and it's like, that's what was disappointing. If you remember back to what made most of the great 80s and 90s action films fantastic, it was the quality of the fights when you had a skilled martial artist in there. So, you know, Van Damme movies were huge because Van Damme was funny and relatable and, you know, attractive. He was a guy everybody wanted to be, but he was also technically proficient, you know?
Right.
And so how often did he did the split kick? How often and did, you know, kickboxer, you know what I mean?
If we're going to be honest, as a 13-year-old male, his movies were guaranteed to have boobies in them.
Well, that's true. True as well. Yeah. I mean, but that's the thing. Like, take your cues from that. So take your cues from the Van Damme flicks. Take your cues from the Jet Li.
Put more boobies in.
I mean, you can even take your cues from Jackie Chan's work.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? Because even though Jackie Chan has always been a comedic hybrid of, mm-hmm. you know, with various styles of Kung Fu, he's still technically proficient. There's still really exciting fight sequences. You know what I mean? And yeah. that just wasn't the case here. You know, I mean, that your last complaint when you go see a Jackie Chan movie is that you didn't like the fights. You know what I mean? They're always
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, nobody ever says that.
You know what I mean? Even if they're kind of slapsticky, they're still fun, you know? And I didn't feel that with most of the fights in Iron Fist.
And see, what I like is that Paul's got this well-thought-out argument, what he wants to see, and it's about the fight technique. Whereas Charles, essentially, if correct me if I'm wrong, but really, all you wanted to see was Danny Rand take his baseball cap and turn it around backwards, right?
I have been waiting for the freaking bandana and the topless Iron Fist the whole damn series, and I've not gotten it yet. He got close in the last episode. He got close. I'm like, all right, you took off your shirt, you got the tattoo out, you got your pants on. Where's your freaking bandana, dude? Come on. So, yeah, that's what I'm looking for. What are you guys looking for in new games? When I see a series of games end, as in this particular one we're about to talk about, did, and then they changed it, I did not expect ever a new one to come out, but there is a new Mass Effect game that is coming or has been released. Has it been released or is it not?
Yeah, it's been out for a couple weeks now.
Okay. But yeah, Mass Effect 3 ended in super steep controversy, but it was supposed to end the storyline. Either way, was my understanding. What's going on with this Andromeda?
Well, first, to discuss what you were just talking about, nothing is ever dead. Comic book characters are never dead forever. Video game franchises, if they're successful, are not dead.
Yeah, circle around to the first part of our conversation at this show.
Yeah. Look at what happened with Halo. They finished the story, and yet we still have Halo games coming out. And we're mainline Halo games, you know what I mean?
Gears of War is the same.
Gears of War, you know.
Yeah.
Ultimately, if these franchises perform, you're going to get new installments, or you're going to get side games, and then you're going to get a new installment eventually. You know what I mean? I mean,
which is this? Is this a side game or a new installment?
It's a new installment. It's not a continuation. Well, I haven't played it, so I don't entirely understand all the storyline cues. But my understanding is, you know, the original trilogy is still a self-contained story, and I believe there's a big time jump, and then this takes place after that, you know?
Okay.
So it's a whole new set of characters and everything.
I did love the ability to create your character in the first game, and that all your decisions, everything carried through each game. That was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. They stole that from Madden.
So what we're going to talk about a little bit here is there's some controversy, because that's one of our favorite things to cover. There's some controversy around Mass Effect Andromeda, which came out a couple weeks ago. And the big one that stands out is there's a number of flaws with the game, let's be honest, first of all. There's some gameplay stuff, but mostly the thing that everybody is focusing on, and it's become a meme, is the facial animations. And that is because they are quite bad at times. Now, why this is kind of relevant is because the Mass Effect series, and BioWare games in particular, you know, because BioWare also did Knights of the Old Republic and more recently Star Wars The Old Republic, the MMO, they're well known for well-crafted story-based games with usually a lot of customization options and a lot of story choices. Like, you really get to sculpt the way your character handles the conversations and the events in the games based on choosing different dialogue options and choices. Like, there's a lot of different points where you have to choose between one thing or the other. And a lot of times it's some very real consequence. You know what I mean? Like, I know it's been a mainstay of the series at some points, like you're torn to decide between two companions in a hectic situation, and probably you're going to lose one of them. You know what I mean? Yeah. So one of the people that you've done a bunch of side quests and all this other stuff with and done a bunch of dialogue is just going to not be there anymore, which adds a lot of emotional punch to a game like that. You know what I mean? So strong narrative, a lot of story choices, all that kind of stuff. So that's one of the things that makes this whole facial animations thing kind of stand out, is because a good portion of the game is spent in dialogue windows, and the dialogue and the facial animations just don't sync well in some cases. And then it's just really, it's rough. And so what we're going to talk about today, though, is there was an article that was put out by Robert Grosso at techraptor.net. And he basically talks about how he knows some people at BioWare, and he did some rooting around, and his sources, you know, have remained anonymous for obvious reasons. Basically, what's gone on is EA/BioWare, they outsource the facial animations to other character animations to other EA companies. And one of them is that they relied on this company called CyberScan to do the faces, because instead of having digital artists sculpt and render the faces internally, they use CyberScan to compensate for time. And arguably, I mean, basically, if you're given, like, King Mac Daddy budget and all the time you need, and you want to build the most realistic character models, you want to start with, you know, composite scans and facial, you know, mocap and all that stuff, because you can build anything off of that. You know what I mean? So they do that, and the gist of this is that it comes back, and BioWare in meetings with EA realizes, well, these facial animations don't look so good, and we think it's going to be a problem. What appears to be the response from EA here, now this is all largely unsubstantiated, you know, I mean, we don't have any official statements from EA or BioWare to confirm this. For the folks at home who don't know, EA being Electronic Arts, being the parent company to BioWare, you know, one of the biggest publishers in the industry who buys up a lot of the smaller developers. They basically come back with, well, we don't really see that as a big deal. So, you know, we don't think it's going to be an issue. It's not a high priority. Because BioWare said they would go out of their way to, you know, put people on fixing those assets.
Well, and some of the artists, didn't they say they would come in and do it for free?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because artists believe in their name and their legacy as BioWare.
Yep, yeah. One artist also claimed that they actively went out of their way to offer their services to do additional work. Yeah, that's a quote ripped from the article. So basically they're like, no, we'd like to have you guys focus on vehicles and armor and that kind of stuff instead. Which kind of speaks to what seems like EA's priority was they were looking at this as, we want the techie stuff to be great. You know what I mean? Like, we want the action and the weapons and all that kind of stuff to be what you focus on. And so this kind of speaks to a couple of things. My first analysis is, it speaks to the fact that we've got typical big corporation syndrome going on with EA, where EA is kind of detached from what people really care about with games. You know what I mean? I mean, they're one [S2] Right. [S1] They're one of the most successful publishers of all time. They've also been getting increasingly criticized, especially in the last, I would say, 5-6 years, but largely for the last decade or so, as being like, kind of like what Disney was before Disney really got all its ducks in a row, you know, where people criticized Disney for being too out of touch, you know, a little too cliched or played out, you know what I mean? And then obviously, you know, Disney got their ducks in a row by getting Pixar and that, you know, doing the Pixar stuff and really crushing that. And then recently picking up Star Wars and Marvel and doing it right. And the reason I bring up Disney in this regard is because what Disney has learned to do is put the right people in the right places to make sure that the product, even though they're still out to make a mountain of money, that's the goal, they're putting out products that appeal to the core fans of that, you know, those various products. So the Marvel MCU and the TV shows, you know what I mean? They're meant to appeal to comic fans, but also to a wider audience. But they're really good at adapting those stories and, you know, keeping the loyal fans and also bringing in new people. Same thing with Star Wars. I mean, you know, you can lob some fair criticism at the two recent films, but they're still really good. They're really entertaining. They're a good time for the general audience and for Star Wars fans alike, you know? And so EA kind of has not done that so well.
They need to start paying more attention at the company meetings then, because doesn't Disney own EA? They're at least their video game arm.
I don't think so. I'll check that.
I'm not sure. We'd have to research that.
I'll Google it now.
But yeah, so the thing is, like, EA's kind of pushed out a lot of lackluster projects through their various developers, you know? And so this is kind of that typical story of big company cares about bottom line, push out the big title, but we don't really understand what drives people to this title, is my feeling. You know what I mean? Where BioWare, they know what they do well. You know what I mean? BioWare knows we're story, we're, you know, really advanced character models for their era. I mean, because the first Mass Effect and the second Mass Effect looked really good for their time. Really, really good. Like, they were basically pushing the boundaries of what you could expect out of video games at each point in time. And so, you know, this whole article kind of interesting, because I saw some of the feedback on Reddit, which is where I picked this up originally, and some people were like, oh, this is kind of unsubstantiated BS, and some people were like, the game's fine, and other people were like, I never play any, I don't care about the story, I'm just there to pew-pew, and it's like, I got involved in a couple conversations, I was like, you know, most people who play this game play it for the story. I mean, it also speaks to the same thing with Old Republic, like, people who play that MMO, it's kind of a joke because people talk about how it's the best single-player MMO you've ever played. It's basically a single-player game with some multiplayer elements that you have to log online to play. You know, and that's another branch of BioWare, but it's like, ultimately, that's what the company does, is really great stories. And so it's just one of those things, kind of want to bring it to the table, is see if we get your guys' feedback. I don't own the game. My roommate does. I've seen him play it quite a bit. He says he enjoys it, but,
that's, you know. I was kind of taken aback by that that opinion that somebody would play a game as in-depth of an RPG as that for the pew-pew.
Right.
Like, go get a pew-pew game, go play Gears of War, go play Halo, not you're something that you spent 20 hours on the beginning just creating your character to not care about what they look like when they talk.
Well, that was another criticism of this game, is that the character, the customization options for starting your character were very limited in this time. Yeah. Yeah, you only had a few options. It didn't really change a lot. Basically, it felt very phoned in, you know? And it seems like maybe BioWare wasn't comfortable with that, but EA was like, nah, you know, put your focus elsewhere. So what do you guys, what else do you think? Charles, do you have any feedback on this?
I don't know. I've been used to games not looking exactly right all the time. Like, I'm a filthy casual, so I play the older games. And currently, I'm still working on Rise of the Tomb Raider, the second one after the reboot. And my only complaint, I watch it, is beautiful graphics. The movements are fairly good, but every once in a while, the motions don't quite line up right. Or my biggest thing is, how many times can she fall down a mountain and not die? I mean, you did great on impaling her on stuff and leaving scars, and blood was permanent throughout the thing. But I, as a paramedic, know that you keep getting hit in that same area, you're going to die, because it's just going to smash your insides. It was just little, you know, mistake, yeah. Not, well, mistakes, but things that most people don't pick up on. But
yeah,
I mean, I'd have to see some video.
Leaf thing, right?
I don't know. I mean, if you love the game like Gears of War, they're all the same to me, and I love them. I mean, I own all but the newest one on my Xbox One, and I played back through the first one. I played back through the second one. The same things I loved the first time, I loved the second time through. But I don't know. I mean, I don't look at it like a movie. I look at it like, you're going to go in, like you said, Chris, I'm going to go in, pew, pew, I'm going to go shoot things with Gears of War. That's all I want. It didn't matter to me that after the first game, I ended it all. But then somehow 5 years later, oh, look, they're back again, and it's different. I didn't care. Like you said, I just wouldn't fly. I'd see video, I guess, to make up. But I want a company. I guess going back to what I really locked in on was, you said they went to the company meeting, everything was presented, and they went, this isn't what we've done before. This isn't quite right. This isn't, essentially saying, this isn't up to our standards. Mm-hmm. And the corporation went, well, we don't care. We got other deadlines to hit. Mm-hmm. And I want a company. I've known people in the business. I'm not known name drop this time, but I have known people in the business, and gaming companies across the board, all the stories you hear about mandatory overtime and just working their people that don't, are true. And it's not just EA, although they were found out to be one of the worst, and there's a big class action lawsuit that changed that. All the companies do it. And I've never known anybody inside of EA, but I want a company, I want to give my money to a company that I know treats their people with respect, and they treat people right. And when somebody steps up and says, our fans are used to this level of quality, and this isn't that. Mm-hmm. I want you to say, well, crap. Okay, let's fix it. What do we got to do to fix it? And it didn't seem like they went that way. I mean, other than that, that's all I can really say, because I haven't played the game or seen the
movie. Yeah, you've got a good point there. One of the things that the article kind of did was kind of try to point a little bit of blame at some of the work being outsourced to EA's Bucharest office, which is in Romania, which for our FTH fans, you'll remember our friend Nikolai from FTH days. He actually worked for them as a game tester for a while. And so I can't really talk too much about like some of the things I heard secondhand from him, but basically, when it was crunch time, even him as like a peon level, like game tester, you know, there were times where they're like, who wants to work overtime? Because we have, like, all this overtime, and we want everybody, you know. And, like, they would find bugs and stuff, and they'd put their reports in, a lot of those bugs didn't always get fixed. You know what I mean? I mean, that's bug killing is tough in programming and in game design. I mean, obviously it's really difficult, and sometimes it's a question of, well, how impactful is this bug actually, you know? But like, EA's kind of like, I mean, the reason they have a Bucharest office is because they pay those guys pennies on the dollar to what they would pay somebody here. Yeah. You know what I mean? And the interesting thing that stands out to me about that, though, is there's recently been a lot of praise for CD Projekt Red, who made the Witcher series. And they're a European company, and they're an independent company. And they put out The Witcher, which was based on a book property. It was kind of a surprise. It was a surprise hit. Really good RPG with some unique elements, you know what I mean? They put out The Witcher 2, again, another step forward. But if you go look at those games were kind of rough around the edges, but they were really good for their time. But The Witcher 3 has gone down in history in the last two, three years as being one of the greatest games of all time. You know, like, people speak very highly of it, and this is published by a really small company comparatively. The game looks great, the gameplay is great, it's very story-based, but also has great action, and because it's The Witcher, very story-driven, but it's about hunting monsters. He's basically a monster hunter, you know, like your Van Helsing type. And so you have to prepare for the hunts and stuff and, you know, get certain things ready to make the fights easier and stuff. And it's a really good mix of like an open world, mostly open world RPG with good story elements, all that stuff. So there's evidence out there that this formula can work. You can put out a fantastic RPG that has great story, you know, good cutscenes, you know, all that stuff. It can look good. And you can even do it with a small company on a relative shoestring budget, but you have to be willing to put the, you know, hold yourself accountable for quality standards. And you also have to be willing to, you know, make sure that you've prepared and get stuff done right in time. And sometimes you got to bump a project back a little bit too. I don't think Andromeda should have come out when it did. I think they probably should have bumped it back at least a month or so. And just based on the feedback I'm seeing, but they don't want to risk that because they don't want to risk losing any money, you know?
Well, and I wonder from EA's standpoint, I wonder how much they were focused on merchandising, possibly, because at the end of the day, a toy's lips don't move, but the vehicles need to look nice, and the weapons need to look nice.
I don't know that there's a lot of Mass Effect merch, but there might be.
Yeah, I was thinking they had a tabletop game or something, maybe.
I don't think so, stuff, no. But there might be a board game or something. But, the thing is, in that regard, though, Halo was a property that had tons of toys made for it and stuff. Like, there's Mega Bloks and kinds of stuff. The thing about Halo, though, is Halo's a franchise that started off as a basic, you know, horde shooter.
It's a hate game for 12-year-olds to rip me apart.
but it grew into an amazing narrative experience, you know?
Yeah.
I forget which number it was because I'd never owned an Xbox. So whenever I've like actually played Halo or seen it played, it's been on a friend's system. You know what I mean? Like, one of the greatest gaming nights of my life, stayed up all night with a buddy of mine about 10 years back, and we beat the first Halo, and it was a lot of fun. But I watched a couple of my buddies get through all of the last installment with Master Chief last I checked. Mm-hmm. And that was like, I was interested watching it like a movie, you know, because they do some action, and the action was fun to watch, except for the last fight, which really sucked because it was really lame. But the story was good too, you know what I mean? And so that's another franchise that grew up from humble roots. A really popular, you know, FPS, but grew into a really story-based franchise, and people really cared about the story and cared about those characters. And there's been side media built off of that. I mean, it's kind of crazy to me that we don't have like a Mass Effect animated show or something like that, you know what I mean? Because it's been so popular. And you look at like Halo got a really amazing little miniseries thing that was done that they put some money into.
Yeah, it was on Netflix for a while.
Forward Unto Dawn. It shows up on the streaming sites, was an incredible thing. And it was done cheap, too. You know, like, they did it in a few
indie
weeks.
Yeah, it's definitely indie.
You know, it's a lot of green screen and stuff like that, but they made it look great. And the story itself, it's only, I think it's a little 20-minute episode, so it's like a little over an hour. But it was really rock solid. It made me really want a good Halo movie, you know what I mean? So yeah.
Anyway, he's working on one right now.
Yeah, well, it keeps getting put into development limbo.
Well, to wrap it up here, nothing I find online says that Disney actually purchased Electronic Arts.
Yeah, it was the deal they made for Star Wars games for the next 10 years. It was,
right.
So yeah, that's a good question, Chris. Stick around. We're gonna make it quick, but after this break, we've got some more interesting news about Marvel and comic book sales coming up next. All right, we're back, and you know who the experts on diversity are? Three white guys. That's who the experts
on diversity are. Well, two and a half
white guys.
Hey, you know, does it count that I grew up in the hood? You know, I don't know where my white privilege went because I've never experienced it myself. But just wondering.
Let me, Charles, do you know what CREAM stands for?
No.
CREAM? Wu-Tang? Get out. Nope.
I'm a West Coaster, man. We talked about
it. Oh, no.
All right.
California loving, I'm over here.
I am California loving. And you're here. Never mind. I'm about to make a really bad joke. Lord, I apologize. So we're going to move on. So there's
you
my
say
wife.
That like they're not all fun. Bad.
Shut up, Superman. All right. So we've got actually a point and a counterpoint here, Klotz. Let's do try to keep this as quick as we can, but say I want you to be able to say your point here. And I believe you're going to be quite angry with Marvel. So go forth and conquer, sir.
So the big thing here is Marvel released a statement just the other day. VP of sales released a statement where he blames diversity for falling comic book sales in recent months.
And we have a link to that in our show notes where he
and
just came up.
A quote that's been pulled is people didn't want any more diversity. They didn't want female characters out there. And this is hitting the community in a big way. People are talking about this.
I would like to see the actual context of the quote myself personally, because this was over like a 3-day meeting
Marvel
or convention.
Retailer Summit.
Yeah, Retailer Summit. So in defense of this guy, just putting it out there, we don't know where in the conversation this excerpt happened. I don't know if he used air quotes.
It's here. It's what we heard. This is the exact quote from the article.
Right. Yeah, we have that exact quote, but we don't know the context in which it was.
Well, it was he told the site ICV2 at the Marvel Retailer Summit. So it sounds like it was a direct interview.
Okay.
However, he did say they didn't want female characters out there. That's what we heard, whether we believe that or not. So, you know, out of context, it's a little more inflammatory than maybe what he's trying to say there is. It sounds like maybe what he's trying to say is that's a feedback we're getting, whether that's true or not. My thing is, basically, so that's the gist. Sales have been dipping lately. They're struggling, which is interesting because arguably right now, Marvel is king of the mountain as far as, you know, movies, TV, all that kind of, well,
the media.
You know, TV to a slightly lesser extent, but you know what I mean? Like they're dominating media right now. You know, Marvel properties are the biggest properties in the world, right up there with Star Wars, you know, other Disney, big Disney properties, you know what I mean?
Now, before you kick off, because I know where we're going, I do want to give credit to Travis Jones of the Blazing Defender Report. Apparently, he was going to be on tonight, but apparently we had massive storms where he lives and his power's still out. But he actually brought an article, not knowing that we're going to talk about Marvel blaming sales. He brought the article to the table. No, diversity didn't kill Marvel comic sales, and we're probably going to reference that a little bit. But credit to Travis, who unfortunately was not able to join us tonight.
Hey, and just going back, so I pulled the original interview, and there were two questions that were asked leading up to it. The final question leading into that quote was, now the million-dollar question, why did those tastes change? And they were talking about October of the previous year is when he is pinpointed as taste change for Marvel comic sales. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if that's a question for me. I think that's a better question for retailers who are seeing all publishers. What we heard, so is he saying that that's what they heard from retailers? You know what I mean? So, and that's right. And exactly. So that's all I'm saying is calm down, everybody. And I'm not saying to you, Paul, to calm down. I'm saying everybody that's flipped triggers right now and is just seeing red, calm down and let's listen to the guy.
That's not really what I want to take Marvel to task over.
No, absolutely. Yep,
I think that was a really flawed thing to say. Like, I don't think he should have said that in interviews like that. I think they should have taken that feedback and kept it internal. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of thing that you process in your think tank. You know what I mean? You say, oh, well, this is what we're hearing from our retailers, or this is what we're seeing, you know. The thing is, and I think Travis's article kind of gets to this, what's really going on with Marvel is that it's kind of a jumbled mess. Last 2 years, we saw a major reboot crossover event that was, I mean, the feedback I see a lot of people come back with is Secret Wars was lackluster. It was, you know, all kinds of jumbled. There were some cool moments, but it wasn't what they were building it up to be. And Civil War 2 was the crossover event that nobody wanted or asked for. And that it was nowhere near what the original event was. And that was very jarring for a lot of people, very polarizing. And I think also the diversity angle is a part of this as well. So the way I would break this down is what we have is you're doing these big crossover events and basically rebooting your universe. You are kind of going ham on your list of your top characters and either killing them off, you know, sending them off into obscurity, whatever, you know, outcome for each individual character there might be. And then you're replacing them with what I call diversity clones. So this is where the diversity does come in. So you're taking like Wolverine, Death of Wolverine, let's put X-23 in the Wolverine monthly title, which is fine. I actually think that's one of the wins. I was like, all right, so you take Wolverine out of the story, put X-23 and you give her some time in the spotlight. I appreciate that. We all know Wolverine's going to come back. I mean, they'd be crazy not to. You got all this stuff going on with kind of auxiliary to all this. You got all this stuff with killing off most of the mutants or, you know, really downplaying them a lot in the storylines, which alienates a lot of people as well. So keep that in mind too. But then you've got, you know, Thor gets dethroned and his mantle gets passed to Jane Foster. You've got Hulk gets, spoilers, I'm not going to say it, but Hulk gets taken out of the picture.
Hulk is recruited for Donald Trump's cabinet.
and Hulk is replaced in two ways. One, by having She-Hulk assume a Hulk title where she drops the She and is now just the Hulk and takes over one of the monthly books for Hulk. And then Amadeus Cho steps forward and takes the other book. We've got, you know, alternate gender / ethnic blend versions of Iron Man and, you know, a number of different core characters.
Okay, and on that point, I just had her name, the character that replaced Iron Man, Riri Williams. Right. Everybody in our geek circles that has mentioned it or had the opportunity to speak about it has reacted positively to it, including Travis Jones, who we joke around, he's the meathead, he's the weightlifter, firefighter guy. He's loved it. Our good friend Tony P. Henderson spoke highly of the series.
Nothing but high praise.
Nothing but high praise in the people that we associate with. Mm-hmm. So how is that? Oh, we're hearing that people don't want diversity.
Well, what I'm getting at here is I think that you have a lot of things all happening at once. You know, you have these big crossover events that are lackluster and falling flat on people, and then you're knocking off all these main characters, and you're jamming the diversity down core fans' throats by saying everything. Basically, you're taking out all these core characters, a lot of them. I mean, it's not an insignificant portion of the core roster, you know? And you're being like, all right, well, too bad if these are your favorite characters, because we're installing different people with those mantles. And it works when it's done sparingly. Like, you know, the X-23 Wolverine thing, I think, works as long as you're not doing it with 5, 6, 7 other characters. I think when they did it with Cap, it was amazing, you know, especially when Bucky stepped into the role. I love Sam in the role too, you know what I mean? Like, those are great steps, because that's a mantle you want to see passed around once in a while. You know, you want to see the different takes on Cap. And even Iron Man, to a certain extent, if it was done at a different time, or if she was, you know, a supplement to him. I don't know exactly what's going on in Iron Man books right now, to be honest, but, you know, but you're basically, on one hand, you're kind of jamming the diversity down people's throats, and it doesn't feel organic. Whereas what we saw with Kamala and Miss Marvel, they took the mantle of Miss Marvel, which was empty, you know, because she's been Captain Marvel forever, and there was nobody as Miss Marvel at the time. And they're like, all right, we're going to tell a really unique and interesting story from a perspective we have not explored at all in the Marvel Universe up to that point. And that book is fantastic. That book gets awesome reception. You know, people really love it.
I loved it.
With good reason, you know, because it's not diversity for diversity's sake. It's a legitimate, honest story. You know, this is a story about a girl who's dealing with all the things that, you know, a girl of her age deals with. She's also dealing with, you know, her faith and how, you know, her powers and all this stuff. And it's really solid. The problem is I don't think you can try to basically half-assedly replicate that through all of your lines. And I think they did that over the last 2 years. They definitely just have been doing that roughshod. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I say I am the audience they want, right? The person who, once you get hooked, you'll spend the money. And I got into the Marvel Unlimited app and I loved it, but I found myself reading, other than Ms. Marvel, I found myself reading all the older stuff that I remembered as a kid, that I remembered as a teenager, or the things I missed out on, like Civil War, the actual Civil War, not Civil War II, and definitely not Secret Wars II or whatever. You know, I didn't get a chance to read Secret Wars, but that's here and there. So I found myself reading these things, and then they're talking about sales decline. Well, because it's expensive as crap. How many times has Chris got on here and talked about, or maybe not on here? I know at some point Chris has mentioned the cost of the books and how much you have to decide between the two bigs. I mean, forget the independents for the sake of this argument, the two bigs, DC and Marvel. I wanted at one time, I had a lot of disposable income, and it ended up going to games because I wanted to subscribe. I just wanted this one line of Punisher books and this one line of Batman books. Mm-hmm. And you can't do that. You have to go to a comic book store, which in the South, or at least in Georgia, is difficult. Even in Atlanta, there's only two, maybe three stores. Mm-hmm. And you have to get them to pull it, and you have to pay, you know. I was like, no, I just wanted to show up in my mailbox, man. Sure. I want to read it. That's all I want.
They used to do that more. Is that not still available?
No. At least 10 years ago when I looked at it, was it? Because I remembered as a teenager, you could do that.
Not from the publishers directly. You can do it. You can get it from, like, I used to use Midtown Comics, but at the end of the day, you're still going through, you know, Diamond.
Yeah.
Which my experience
in the game store industry sucks.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I wanted to bring up too. Charles, go ahead and finish what you're saying. Sorry, I don't
mean to. That was really it. Yeah. The barrier to entry is difficult.
Pricing is definitely an issue now. It's more expensive than it's ever been to try to stay current.
I've got two other articles that are about this and the fallout, and one of them, it's kind of ridiculous when you see this. So between October 2015 and February 2017, Marvel launched or relaunched at least 104 ongoing superhero series for an average of about 6 new number ones a month. That is an astounding number of titles. Unsurprisingly, a very large number of these series have failed to find an audience. Roughly a quarter, 25, were canceled within 10 or fewer issues published. At least another 7 books, or 7%, launched in late 2016, early 2017, appear to be very likely to meet the same fate. Like, they're just throwing anything they can at the wall and seeing what sticks, and you can't run that company that way.
That's my point is, yeah. Okay, so I remember a certain type of Punisher, and I understand different storylines break off, you write them differently, different writers, blah, blah, blah. When you start talking, take it to DC for a second. New 52. Okay, I'm confused. You're starting over. All right. Now I'm talking about as me, as the filthy casual, as the audience that, if you hook me in, we spend money. Mm-hmm. Right? Oh, okay, I don't follow. All right, I start to understand, but whatever. Oh, by the time I start to wrap my mind around it and maybe think I might want to get into it, oh, here's Rebirth. Boom. I can't. And then, Chris, what you just said about throwing bajillion titles, I know it's not the new number, but right, a bajillion titles at the wall. Mm-hmm. How am I supposed to pick from Iron Man to Invincible Iron Man to Incredible Iron Man to Awesome Iron Man to Alcoholic Iron Man? He's like, what? Well, give me what you've done in the movies. Give me one let me fall in love with it and shut up and take my money.
Yeah. So one the of other... the other, or sorry,
oh,
yeah, go ahead, Chris.
Okay, so one more. So then there's another one by Rob Salkowitz, and he says, on a practical level, this is not really a story about diversity at all. It's a story about the rise of young adult comics. If you look at it that way, the things that sell and don't sell and the markets they sell in versus the markets they don't sell in start to make a different kind of sense. And what he's talking about right there more specifically are trades. Because the trades, a book may not sell well on individual issues, but once those trades come out, and that's why DC, that's why I'm firmly convinced that DC won't move to the unlimited platform anytime soon, is because they make a killing off of those trades. But the trades aren't bound by Diamond publishers or Diamond distributors. Those are bound by their printers, and their printers have wide distribution rights to go into every brick and mortar store of any type and any online store. So it's about whether or not you can get a trade off of it and whether those series find new life in those, in the trades. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I also saw, I don't remember who it was, but one of the creatives originally involved with the Ms. Marvel reboot, or not reboot, but Kamala, her emergence. One of the things that was said by that person was that when they got that book greenlit, they had no expectations. They actually thought that they knew they were going to get canceled. They're like, maybe we get four issues, maybe we get five. And so they went into it, they're like, we don't care about trying to pander to sales. We care about telling the story we want to tell. So if we are going to get canceled, let's do the best story we can. And so they went into it and they did that. And they told the story that they wanted to tell, and it resonated. And the next thing they knew, they, you know, got a few more issues and a few more issues, you know, and here we are a couple of years later, and she's a mainstay. You know, I mean, she's not, I wouldn't say Kamala is like hardcore, you know, main cast character yet, but she has an audience. People love her. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And even people who are, I mean, there's this stereotype in comic fandom of, like, you know, the crotchety, either basement dwelling, you know, white kid nerd, or the older, you know, crotchety,
white guy nerd.
Those stereotypes exist for a reason. Those people do absolutely exist, and some of them do have some pretty, you know, close-minded views on some of this stuff, but I'm seeing that some of those types of people are still finding value in the books that are written well, and Kamala being one of them. They're like, you know, she's actually pretty great. And I think that's noteworthy. And so what I would say is, like, this is kind of a perfect storm of all of those issues together. Why do we have, like, Charles, you just said it, why do we have so many different books for each property? Let's trim that down. Let's tighten it up. You know what I mean? Like,
I would say, why do we have so many books that we're only putting half efforts into? Because I'll tell you what, in the 90s, like, how many X titles were out there, and every one of them, I was eaten up, and there weren't a lot that were just horrible. Like, I never read an X book that I was like, how did this even get printed? Why am I reading this?
But
I might have an issue that I had a problem with, but as far as the series itself,
the thing you gotta keep in mind is the context of the 90s. That wouldn't fly today. You know, that would fall flat on its face. There's so much media out there.
I don't know, though, man, because DC's doing that. I mean, you're getting two Superman books a month, two Batman books a month, and that's just the $2.99 titles. That doesn't even include the other stuff supplementary to it. I mean, Justice League and any of the other titles that might be the $3.99 price point, they're showing that you can do it. You just have to do it. You have to write compelling stories. And you have to show the customer or the fans that you care about not only the properties that you're writing about, but about them in such a way as you're not just trying to get money out of their pocket.
It's over diversified. It's okay. So we talked about Iron Fist being rushed, right? We talked about Daredevil taking its time, whatever. We see the movies that Marvel makes, and they spend the time to prepare for it. They spend the time to write for it, blah, 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 so on and so forth. But when you do such you've overwatched it's I keep thinking of drug and alcohol references, but basically when you want to sell more crack, you cut it with the BS to make it weaker so you have more of it to sell. And that's what it feels like they've done with Marvel. And it's too weak, it's too watered down. And I mean, I appreciate, it's, I mean, I know really he's on our networking, plugging, but I appreciate the Blazing Defender, Travis Jones, for going out every week and buying independent books and different various books and reading them and using his own money to do that. Because a lot of shows don't. They just do the mainstream books. But I, even listening to him, I love listening to him, but I still don't know where to start if I were to go out and spend my money.
Well, that's too much. That's another point, too, is that there's a couple other, you know, less mainstream publishers that have embraced more diverse titles, and they're crushing it right now. Image has a lot of diversity titles that are well-written, and they're honest, and they have audiences. You know what I mean? That's the big difference. The authenticity is a big thing. I've seen a lot of articles pop up too. It's like, who's writing these sometimes too? You know what I mean? People, representation being a big inspiration right now, people want to see stories written by people who match, you know, the story that's trying to be represented. Because, and you know, I think it's a little closed-minded to think that, say, for example, a middle-aged white guy is incapable of writing a female character or incapable of writing a black female character or, you know, any kind of ethnic and gender combination you can imagine, or even putting themselves in the mindset of, let's say, a gay character if they're straight, that kind of thing. I think we as human beings are capable of, you know, emphasizing and, like, getting empathy. I butchered that. I think we're capable as human beings of feeling what other people feel to a certain extent, and I think we can put that on the page, but there's a lot of credibility to the idea that maybe we should have the right people writing these different stories. My big argument remains, but not at the cost of killing off what people already care about, because that's going to be sour grapes, you know? People are not going to care about your, you know, as I hate to use the term again, diversity clone, if you're bumping off their favorite version of that character to put it in their face. You know what I mean? So my big thing as far as the diversity angle goes, I've always pushed for create new, interesting characters and then thread those characters through the existing stories, introduce them in main books and get people hooked on them that way. I mean, you don't necessarily have to give a Kamala Khan style, well, we're just going to give you a dead title and let you run with it for a couple of issues and see if it works out. You don't necessarily have to do that. You're going to introduce these characters and other things. One of the things about particularly 90s era X-Men that really worked is every time they introduced new characters, it was usually in the mix with characters you knew. You know what I mean? Like Generation X had, you know what I mean, established characters involved with that team. And you were like, oh, okay, cool. You know what I mean? Like, so you had a root. You know, you had somebody to go off of there. You're like, oh, I like these characters. And so that's really the big thing is it's like they're just not putting any effort into that aspect of it. And also stop killing the goddamn mutants. Like, stop it.
Yeah.
Stop trying to destroy it because Fox owns it.
Well, not sorry they kept you afloat. Sorry they built your empire in the late 80s and 90s. Yeah.
Right.
Well, we want to know your thoughts on all this stuff. I mean, I feel spit now. I'm like, I feel like lighting my picket sign on fire. And
Charles
walking
is ready
from
for a smoke. You know what I mean? Like,
a good show though. I mean, we went back and forth on some good stuff, and we want to know. Honestly, we want to know what you think. We want to know you get to put your two cents on here. So email us btp@giantsizeteamup.com. If you go to giantsizeteamup.com/support, or just go to giantsizeteamup.com, you'll see the support tab. You'll have the email stuff there. You'll have the Facebook, the Twitter, iTunes, all that stuff. You can leave us a review. You'll see all the other shows on the Giant Size Team Up Network. A lot of great, including Travis Jones, a lot of great stuff out there. And we want to hear from you. So if you want a voice actually to be heard, giantsizeteamup.com/breakingthepanel. Go there. There's a speak pipe tap. Leave your voicemail. We'll play it on the show. We'll discuss it. And I mean, this stuff needs to be talked about. All of it. I mean, we definitely are an apologist, right? We've proven that. We're not apologists, and we're not fanboys, but we do love what we talk about. We love the properties that we get to see and view. And before we wrap it up fully, any last words from you guys? Anything else you want to throw in?
Nope.
Yeah, all right, cool. All right, well, in the name of our Lord and Savior, DC on screen. And they did have a great quote this week, and I lost it, man. I wanted to throw it out there. But I do enjoy the show. I enjoy all the shows on the networks. Definitely check
Everybody knows how much you enjoy the show.
You know, you have to do more promotion of DC on Screen by mocking me than I do actually talking about it on the show. That'd be fun.
You know, to be fair, as much as you kneel at the altar of DC on Screen, I've had a little conversation with the boys over at Botched about just how far up their backsides Chris has crawled. So, I mean, let's just say that Chris is basically a Henson puppeteer.
And all I'm saying is I brought you the gospel of Botched, and everybody's life is brighter because of it.
Well, I can't argue with that. The network is definitely shining brighter because of them. And we love that they're here. If you feel like, you know, we're in these discussions and you would love to talk to us about it, patreon.com/breakingthepanel. You support the show, you get into our Facebook group, and we will have these discussions. I mean, Klotz, you live and breathe on discussions, man. That is your energy for the day, is discussing topics.
Yeah, kind of.
You really sold that. Thank you, Klotz. Thank you for helping out.
I like to talk and be heard, and occasionally I'll even shut up long enough to hear what you have to say too.
Well, that is fair enough. So, all right. Well, until next week, when you get to hear Chris say,
"I stuck 9 cream eggs up my bum."
Oh my goodness.
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at giantsizeteamup.com.